Okay, everyone thanks you. Everyone's telling me it's on the website the day later. They're all afraid. Baruch Hashem. What's there to be so happy with that kefir? I don't know, but I did give a good shiur yesterday. The shiur, I had the insight with Reb Moshe, with the Masoret Moshe. You'll see it opens your mind, and I'm absolutely right. It explains Reb Moshe, it explains the Chazon Ish, it explains the Aruch HaShulchan, it explains Reb Moshe Bick, and I owe it to the Masoret Moshe. Okay, I still can't get over the conversation, but I got a break with yesterday and pick up today. Today is Monday morning, September 22nd, 2014. We Ashkenazim said Slichas for the second time this morning. Am I right? Second time, correct? And it's the era where we lose a little bit of sleep. I want to say hello to all my wonderful students in front of me. People ask me about the Kol this year. I say, better than ever. And to all the students listening across the great universe. Now, we started with Shmuel Belkin, and just very quickly, a young refugee comes to America, never speaks about his youth, his father murdered before his eyes, children taken away, never seen again, communism. Oh, what Rav Shmuel Belkin experienced in Europe. His poverty was indescribable, as I gave you a source when he learned in Slonim. They had one bed in the room, he and Rabbi Rum, at that time a youngster, took turns sleeping. One slept on the floor, one slept on the bed, and they reversed the next night. They had one coat that they shared between them and one pair of shoes. So this is the way they lived. And Rabbi Belkin comes to America in 1928, basically. Comes to the Western Hemisphere, I should say. Goes to Canada, where he has a sister living. A cousin brings him back to New York. He goes to Torah Vadas. But the real action at that time was at Yeshiva Reb Tzichol Chanan. They had just moved uptown. They just opened up the Washington Heights campus. Reb Shimon Shkup was there. And it seems that Reb Shmuel Belkin knew Reb Shimon Shkup from Europe. Again, we're guessing. All this is guesswork. We do know he learned in Rotten in Europe because he had smicha from Rabbonim in Rotten. We knew that he knew the Chafetz Chaim. And I can tell you, living testimony, his Rebbe in Rotten was Rabbi Mendel Zaks, the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, married to a daughter from his second wife. People don't realize the Chafetz Chaim's wife is buried in America. And people say to me, how long did she live? I said, that's not his first wife. That's his second wife, who was much younger. She's taka buried right between Queens and Manhattan in that cemetery there. There's a Chelkat Brisk, I think it's called, where Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky is buried there. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik is buried there. I believe Reb Chaim Heller is buried there. One after another. I was once taken on a tour. It was unbelievable. It's the Major Tehili is buried there. And the Chafetz Chaim's second wife and his daughter from his daughter, his son-in-law, unbelievable. Anyway, not his daughter, it's his son. His son is buried there. His daughter came in Aliyah later and is buried in Yerushalayim. So Dr. Belkin comes to America and he wanders into the Reed Space Medrash, and Rabbi Revel falls in love with him for obvious reasons. Tries to learn English and opens up a dictionary, and he had a photographic memory, and every word in the dictionary he knew. The only problem is, when you learn a dictionary, it doesn't give you the ability to speak. It gives you the ability to read. You'll understand every word. So someone who was then getting smicha from Reitz, by the name of Emanuel Rachman, rabbi doctor later to be president of Bar Ilan, very famous rabbi, arranges for Dr. Belkin, at that time Shmulek Belkin, to go to Columbia and have a chavruta who speak evidently remedial English or English as a second language, whatever. And so on, starts speaking to him, and he masters English on a very elementary level at the time. I have letters from Dr. Belkin from that period, 29, 30. You'll find his English to be grammatically incorrect, the mistakes in spelling. It's primitive yet. Then he needs panasser, even though his cousin Ida Sobel has great zechuna livracha, she helps support him. but he needed panasa. So that year, the Yeshiva New Haven is open. Rabbi Levenberg and Rabbi Belkin is on the initial faculty of the Yeshiva in New Haven, 29-30. He was very proud of it, as he told me. I throw out a challenge with Nei Yisrael today when they publish their history or boast about their Rosh Yeshiva. Will they be willing to boast that Harav Dr. Shmuel Belkin, the second president of the Rosh Yeshiva of YU, was on the initial faculty of what became Nei Yisrael? Because from New Haven it goes to Cleveland it goes to Baltimore. And it's like Rakefet says about Hebron Yeshiva, it's the only yeshiva that can't boast about their most famous graduates. Chaim Herzog, Shlomo Lagerenchik, Shlomo Gorin, Menachem Melon, Hebron Yeshiva, which is up the block, but they all studied when it was in Rehov HaYeshiva in Geula, which is named in honor of the yeshiva. I yet saw the original Hebron Yeshiva. I went to visit them, went to Hishmuasim when I came in Aliyah. 45 plus years ago, Hebron Yeshiva cannot boast about his graduates. So I throw out this challenge to Nei Yisrael. Will they boast about Rabbi Revel? Yes or no? And then he reaches the conclusion, as Rabbi Revel reached so many years earlier, that in America you need a degree, you have to go to college, you have to go to university, you have to get a doctorate. As I quoted the Rav telling one of his Talmidim that without a doctorate, your education is not complete. I just read that recently. I knew it too. Abba Braunschweigel tells the famous story. If you know Rabbi Braunschweigel, he says how the Rav says to him that he has to get a doctorate. And this is the same. I love Abba. We grew up together. He should only have a Rafu Shlem. I remember him as he was, as a kid, a survivor. And could you picture Abba Braunschweigel? He's the one who made that famous hesped for the Rav during the Shleishma, made the statement that created havoc in Yeshiva University. I never saw the Rav hold a secular book in his hands. In other words, whenever he came to visit the Rav in his apartment, the Rav was learning. He wasn't reading secular literature or scientific literature or mathematical literature, etc., etc. And Abba made the claim in public. So between Abba's so-called PhD and Abba's world Anschein, Weltanschein, there's a certain dichotomy, I would say. But Dr. Belkin realized he needed a doctorate, and Rabbi Revel arranged for him to get into Brown University in Rhode Island, took some courses at Harvard, needed a scholarship, and they were so impressed with this young Shmulek Belkin at the Brown that they said, but our scholarships in the theological studies and philosophical studies, our scholarships are limited to Baptist ministers. So he says to Dr. Belkin, you're no Baptist, but I know you're a minister. I make you an honorary Baptist minister. And that's how he got a scholarship to Brown. And then he goes, what can I tell you, Beta? What's it called? What's the society called? Phi Beta Kappa. And as I quoted to you from Geller's insightful work, that he wore the Phi Beta Kappa pin as a secular mezuzah. Those are Dick Geller's words here, right in the article. He would wear his Phi Beta Kappa key in his vest like a secular mezuzah. You got to be very smart to know all these terms and why you didn't have Phi Beta Kappa. Do they have it today? But I can tell you I did graduate college summa cum laude, number one in my class. Big deal, you understand? In retrospect, you look back, all right, maybe it's nice, summa cum laude, or I don't know. I don't even know what the magna laude, magna laude, summa cum laude, Baruch Hashem. You got to learn, what is it, Latin? You got to learn Latin in order to be a big shot. So, Rabbi Belkin, but it's so insightful because you see, Rabbi Belkin and the Rav, and this was the point that came up yesterday in class, Alex, they were totally at home in the Western world. In other words, you cannot say that Rabbi Heschel Shechter is totally at home in the Western world. I grew up with Rabbi Heschel. I call him Heshi, but I got to be machabed him in front of his Talmidim. But you cannot say that Meir Tversky is totally at home in the Western world. You understand? You might want to say Michael Rosenzweig is totally at home, but Michael Weinstein is not a public figure. Rav Schechter and Meir Tversky are much more on the public lifeline, although Michael Rosenzweig is an Adam Gottel, don't misunderstand me, but he's more Nechbal HaKelem, he's different, and when he gives his shia, Rav Heschel can give his shia and can entertain a public as well. You understand? He has that ability. I don't think Rav Michal, he gives his shia, fabulous shia, but it's for the Mevinim, it's not for the Hamon Ha'am. There's a difference. The Rav had the ability, was unbelievable, because you heard the Rav in the classroom, you heard the Rav Maria, you heard the Rav Saturday night in Boston, and you heard the Rav Sunday morning in Boston. And each time it was a different Rav. It wasn't the same Rav. He was dealing with a different audience. It was amazing. He had that. I'll tell you who else had that ability. Rav Teitz. If you knew Rav Teitz of Elizabeth, he could give a shiur on a Litvish level, and he could give a popular shiur of Gemara on the radio. He was the first one to do that. You don't know what machlokes there was, how many people were angry at him, and he's teaching Gemara. Yeah, you have Rabbanim, and Mechalal Shabbos might be listening. Why should they learn Gemara? Adarabba. This is before the outreach. This is before Chabad conquered the world. Chabad taught us outreach, what outreach is about. And today, on the Rabba, we say, let's give the Shia and let a Mechalal Shabbos come and Halavaya Lapid should sit down and learn and understand what his responsibilities are to the blood in his body and to 1,000 years from now as well. Halavai. So this was Dr. Belkin. He was at home. He was proud. The Rav too. I mean, I have to tell you, when that famous incident happened that to me and the Torah in the United States, when Danny Greer says to the Rav, Rebbe, you're holding back Torah from Jewish boys. And the Rav, what do you mean? And Danny's first words, I'm a Princeton graduate. The minute the Rav heard he's a Princeton graduate, Danny already was on a different level. You understand what I'm saying? This was an Ivy League college coming to learn. All right, I found out later that Danny Greer's family knew the Rav very well. I didn't know that at the time. I was sitting down, sitting right there, a little kid, Ani Rothkopf, shaking. The chutzpah to talk to the Rav that way. And the Rav says, all right, tomorrow the shiur will be in English and I'll give you a bechina. This was Tuesday. Wednesday, talk of the shiur was in English. We struggled to understand the English. Abba Braunschweigel was hysterical. He was so upset, you have no idea, because Edgar Chavit in Yiddish, he grew up in Yiddish. He survived the concentration camps in Yiddish. I'll tell you something about Rabbi Braunschweigel. You should know that the Gerer Rebbe, the Ra'im, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai, we're not talking today's Gerer Rebbe, we're talking the third Gerer Rebbe, the grandson of the Sfat Emet. He was raised on the lap of the Sfat Emet. No, it's before the Beit, the father of the Beit Yisrael, the Ra'im, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai Alta. He was the Gerer Rebbe, the 20s, the 30s, survived with miracles, died Shavuos 1948. So he's buried in Machne Yehuda. You can see his grave. His son is buried, Tmeni Menachem is buried next to him. That was his youngest son. Only half his family was wiped out, half survived. So when Rav Abba's grandfather used to walk in and the Gerer Rebbe saw him, he would stand up immediately. Abba's grandfather was the Melamed Dagdaki of the Re'im, of the Gerer Rebbe. They were Gerer Chassidim, these were Poland. So this is the family he came from. But Rabbi Spelkin and Soloveitchik were totally at home. There was a certain difference between them, which I'll come to, but not yet. Now, Rabbi Belkin comes back from Brown, and he has a doctorate and a big Talmud Chacham. 35, he's appointed to teach Greek Latin in the college. 36, he's appointed a Rosh Yeshiva. And then tragedy strikes. He is a young man. The students love him. And we're going to come back to this in great detail later today. And December 1940, Rabbi Revel dies. January 41, Rabbi Soloveitchik dies. And now the place is in turmoil. Within a few weeks, they're both gone. Everyone that the students looked up to. Now, and let me pick up here. The Agudas HaRabbanim, during Revel's regime as president and Rosh Yeshiva, the Agudas HaRabbanim had one hand in the yeshiva. Rabbi Revel always had to live under their aegis. He wouldn't let them put two hands into the yeshiva, but they certainly had one hand. Now, what am I talking about? All of Orthodoxy in America was not that big. There was a handful of Jews. Agudas HaRabbanim had one yeshiva they could turn to. Yeshiva Sibbutz Chochanim. When Yeshiva Sibbutz Chochanim began, there was no other advanced yeshiva in America. Even later, Torah V'das begins as an elementary school, afterwards a high school, Chaim Berlin, an elementary school, a high school. By the way, both Torah V'das and Chaim Berlin began as Mizrahi-oriented institutions, big Zionist institutions, Yeshiva Day schools, Zionism after World War I. Those of you who heard my lectures years ago on Zionism, no, after World War I, Zionism went on the map. Before World War I, if you were a Zionist, you were an outcast, you were an oddball, there's something the matter with you. After World War I, hundreds of thousands of Jews became official Zionists, paid the shekel, joined Zionist organizations. But there was only one advanced yeshiva. There was only one Maitre Te'ilui in America. There was only one Reb Shimon Shkop in America. And the Agudas HaRabbanim, they watched the yeshiva. They considered themselves the spiritual guardians of the yeshiva. Rafi, if I can use that name, quote, end quote. Now, how do you know I'm right? It's very simple. Who gave you smicha? Rabbi Revel signed the smicha. The Agudas HaRabbanim signed the smicha. Ramaz, Rabbi Leventhal, Rabbi Rosenberg. These were leaders of the Agudas HaRabbanim. Who sat in on the exams? In the volume on Revel, by my good friend, Arnie Rothkopf, there's an unbelievable description there of what happened at a smicha b'chinur in 1937. Right or wrong, I was challenged. I write about it afterwards in Washington. But I told the truth 100%. Who walks in? Yisrael Rosen. He's the boss. He's in charge. All right. The Reb Moshe Soloveitchik signed the smicha. The Maitre signed the smichas in the 20s. But the Agudas HaRabbanim people were always in the Bechinot, signing the Smichot. They had a lot of input. Now, there's no question, and we spoke about this in great length last year, there's no question, with the founding of the college, the Agudas HaRabbanim faces a dilemma. Because you can have an elementary school, you can have a high school. That does not necessarily contradict Torah. But when you have a liberal arts college where there's academic freedom, you wind up in YU. I took courses in English literature. I told you every second word that came out of the professor's mouth were curses. One of them, they're all gone already. They're all dead. One of them were always, he picked on Dr. Belkin. It's like every shiur he enjoyed maledicting Rav Shmuel Belkin. You take courses in biology, Darwin, right or wrong? How can you not learn Darwin? How can you not learn all these theories, evolution? All right, you can debate. You have other theories. We remember with Shmuel Soloveitchik, we would speak about it at length. But a college is a liberal arts college. You hire professors. You cannot intervene or interfere with what they're teaching. And all right, the Agudas HaRabbanim, many of the members started to have doubts. In addition, you now have more yeshiva. You have choice. You don't know what's going on in Talpiyot, but these last few days have seen mamish a revolution. Talpiyot has all the major cheap food stores. And Osherad opened. They didn't even have to announce their opening. I fell in there yesterday by mistake. I never saw such a crowd in my life. You might think they were giving away diamonds. People were fighting to get into the store. All right, I do admit they were giving away packages of delicious cookies for a shekel 47, I think. I can't believe it yet. I paid pennies for half a kilo of delicious cookies. Mashiach tzeit. It's like going into a shtibble. Someone has your tzeit. Puts out a good collation. But competition. Supercell deal, they told me, was empty. Rami Levy, you could actually find parking at any of the Rami Levy's yesterday. Nothing works like competition. You now had Teira Vadash in Alkheim Berlin. And you now had Judah Peyeshud Abonim coming over. Remember, running away from Hitler. And they're very upset with Yeshiva. And they would like to interfere. They would like to close the college, fence it in. They can't get rid of it anymore. But at least nothing should be taught that is contrary. Turn it into a Catholic college, to use the Rav's words. And it was a lot of, the minute Rabbi Revel died and Rav Moshe died, the yeshiva got involved. You can read all about it in a wonderful volume that has now come out in the fourth edition. The Silver Era. Boy, it's pretty bad if a North has to praise his own writings. Man, Lichtendred. All right, what can you do? Ellie, you can read all about it. They want an Arayin mission, you understand? A koch level, you know, a little Yiddish, a koch level. If your Rebbe called you a koch level, it means you're going to be a good public rabbi. You got it? If you're not a koch level, you can only be a melamed. But a koch level, look at Rabbi Riskin. He runs a world of institutions. Look at Rabbi Luchstein. These are koch level. And they want to mix in. And the board of directors see this is a new generation. 1941, they tell the Agudas HaRabbanim in very nice but firm language, get lost. Rabbi Silva writes a letter. The yeshiva is orphaned. He quotes the Gemara that I quoted to the Rav, Tlushkin, Rabbi Tlushkin quotes me in his new book on the Rebbe, when I quoted in the Rav with Chaim Gold, that famous incident with Chaim Gold, that's when I went to college, and the Rav says to him, Chaim, one thing I know, Chazal tell us that Chachamim, the Rabbanim, are the Avim Shel Yisoymen, and you're a Yasim, and I'm responsible for you. Go to college. So Rabbi Silva writes a letter. The yeshiva is widowed. This is orphan. We are the rabbanim. We are in charge. We have to take charge. We have to see that you don't stray. We want to appoint the new Rosh Yeshiva. We want to appoint the new president. We want to be on the board of trustees. We want to be involved in the decision making. We want to have veto power. And in a very nice way, without even giving them a bottle of Daniel's schnapps, they tell them, get lost. Follow? And now what's amazing is they appoint three Rashi yeshiva to run the yeshiva. Rabbi Revel is gone. Rabbi Moshe is gone. No, they appoint Rabbi Belkin, Rabbi Olshevsky, and Rabbi Aaron I pronounce it the American way, Burak. In Litter, they used to pronounce it Burak, Harav Burak. And you understand, Rabbi Olshevsky was an old-time Rosh Yeshiva who was with the yeshiva from East Broadway, even probably before East Broadway. Rabbi Burak was Rav of a Piwis Atelja. I knew him very well. He was Rav of a big shul in Williamsburg. He came into the yeshiva to say shir. In other words, he added prestige by giving a shir in the yeshiva four times a week, I believe it was. And he had an assistant who took care of the class when he wasn't there. And Rabbi Belkin. Well, Rabbi Belkin was the youngest. No one knew his name outside of the yeshiva. But he had an iron will. You didn't cross him. He insisted any decision made, he had to approve. He insisted the attendance books. Today, I don't believe Richard Joel sees the attendance books, who comes to class and who doesn't come to class. But Rabbi Belkin insisted he has to see the attendance books. Within a few months, Rabbi Burak couldn't care less. He's busy in Williamsburg. He says this year, Zaman Zayin Gesund. Rabbi Olshevsky was on in years. They were the happiest people alive that Rabbi Belkin was taking charge. So here, this unknown individual, before you know it, 1 year later, they appoint him the Rosh Yeshiva in charge of the functioning of the yeshiva. What you would call today the dean of the yeshiva. He's in charge. He's the boss. Now, of course, they have to appoint a committee who's going to make the decision who shall succeed Rabbi Revel. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik, it's a lot of heartache. You all know the story. The Rav was vilified by some elements of the students. They offered him the position for 1 year. 1 year, Rafi. Smack in his face. And they said to him, at the end of the year, we'll reevaluate. And you know who they sent to talk to him? Believe me, you could be frightened out of your wits to go to Rav Soloveitchik. He was a youngster. He still wasn't the Rav. But to go to such an individual with such an offer, they sent Herbert Goldstein. What was the uniqueness of Herbert Goldstein? His Ehrlichkeit. How do you say that in English? Ehrlichkeit. No, yes, Ehrlichkeit. English. Help me out.
You could say decency.
Decency. Fairness. What's the fairness? Decency. He was a sweetheart of an individual. Rabbi Goldstein could get away with it. And Itaka went to the Rav, and the Rav agreed. And as Vic Geller says, despite their best intentions, they wound up with the greatest choice ever. In other words, they would have been happy, not the Rav. Why do we need machloket? Why do we get involved with the Boston Kashrut scene? Everything that went on there, the volume described in the two volumes, the Rav, the world of Shemaim. No one ever sat with the Rav again. From that little classroom, year by year, he became the Rav. It's a story worthy of a documentary. Thank God there's someone sitting in this room that brought that documentary to life. Yeah, Baruch Hashem. And I have to mention, my wife's grandparents stopped in the right shul in East New York, Rabbi Lavovitz, the shul, and Abe Lavovitz gave me $1 million to do that project. You want to know more? When the documentary came out, he sent his children. You have no idea. I was in upstate New York, Mount Kisco. They had to come in from Riverdale. It was snowing. Their father said, you must go and thank Rakefit in person for bringing me into this project. Imagine, to take a mill and to get thanks for it. So Baruch Hashem, you have a documentary, The Lonely Man of Faith. It's an interesting documentary. I agree with about 95% of it. Some parts I think the loneliness was overplayed, but it's there. But the producer. Once he takes charge, I'm only on the sidelines. And I asked him, where did he said Abe Lavovitz? That was his take on the Rav. Abe Lavovitz's take. No, if a guy's putting $1 million in, he has a right to allow his opinion to shine through. Anyway, be it as it may, that problem is solved. Now the presidency. They've now told the Agudat HaRabbanim, get lost. You will play no role in deciding. Who does decide? Okay. I'm going to mention to you the seven people who were appointed to the seven-man executive board with full authority over the entire institution. This is on page 63 of Vic Geller's book. The chairman of the new body was the borough president of Manhattan, Sam Levy. Now, Samuel Levy, who was borough president of Manhattan, chairman of the Yeshiva's Board of Trustees, was a very prominent member of KJ, of Rabbi Joseph Lichtenstein Shul. So that tells you something. Sam Levy. Number two, his rabbi, Rabbi Joseph Lichtenstein, vice chairman. Right there, the power to make the decision is put essentially in the hands of Kehilat Yeshurun. The other members were who's the other famous rabbi on the west side, Rabbi Leo Young, Mr. Samuel Zah. Let me just say a few words about the Shmuel Leib Zah. We used to call him Shalaz. Shmuel Leib Zah was a Telge Yeshiva Bacha. It's Rabbi Mordechai Gifter's uncle. If Rabbi Mordechai Gifter wound up in Telz in Europe, it's because his uncle was Shmuel Leib Zah and told him, go to Telz. I went to Telz. Shmuel Leib Zah was a Talmud Chacham, not a Gaon, a Litvish Talmud Chacham, a Litvish Mensch, very insightful, very sharp, very clever, good sense of humor, and a balanced individual. A balanced. Try to understand that word. He didn't. We loved him. That's all I can tell you. His son was the doctor of the yeshiva. His son-in-law, who just died a few weeks ago, Rabbi Zuraf, was the dean of the principal of BTA. His daughter, Esther, should live and be well, was dean of students at Stern College, beloved. This was a real yeshiva family. His grandson, the famous Nazi hunter, who has tremendous skliyot, Rabbi Doctor, I don't know if he has smicha, Ephraim Zuraf. So he's a Litvishud. Remember this. You'll see why that's important. Then, after Mr. Zah, Dr. Moses Isaacs. Now, Dr. Isaacs essentially was dean of the college, although I don't think they used that title yet. He was from a Yeki family that came to America either before the Civil War or right after the Civil War. It's probably one of the, if there's a second family like it, could be there is, I will be surprised, I will be happy. This is a family that came to America 150 years ago at least, and the family remained from. It turned out magnificent individuals, Torim, their heretz in the full sense of the word, at Yeshiva, at Harvard. Their direct descendants living in Israel today. I've taught some of the direct descendants. It's an unbelievable family. So, Dr. Isaacs of the college, Dr. Pinchas Churgin, Dr. Churgin. Let's say a few words about Dr. Churgin. Do you recognize the name? Make believe you do. So, Alex, the ignorant, don't live in a glass house, but live in a house where the encyclopedias are on the wall and knowledge is at their fingertips. Dr. Pinchas Churgin was the Talmud of Lashon, a Litvish Talmud Chacham, but Vic, he broadened. Mark, he became scientific scholarship, PhD. He headed up at that time the yeshiva branch that had some scientific scholarship in it was Teachers Institute. We spoke about it last year, the whole history of how Teachers Institute begins with Reb Meir Berlin, it's taken over by the yeshiva, and their faculty were all from, but they were Dr. Kaplan, Dr. Klotz, there were others, they were broader than a Litvish Rosh Yeshiva. Tell me, how does Dr. Churgin crown his life achievement? The founding president of University Bar Ilan. I think he still has daughters. I hope they're still alive. Maybe I'm wrong already. They taught him. One daughter opened up the music department. She was in music. You can check me out on this. Go to the Wikipedia and look at the entries under Churgin. Dr. Churgin was a powerful figure in the yeshiva. And then the seventh member, Dr. Shmuel Belkin, representing the Reitz faculty. So it's fascinating. Sam Levy, Joe Lookstein, pardon me that I'm not giving titles, Leo Young, Shmuel Leib Zah, Moses Isaac, Churgin, and Belkin. These were the people who were delegated, run the school, and choose a new president. Okay. Before I go further, just let me look at the list. I had a big crowd yesterday, and I see today is more or less stabilized. Yomo! Okay, we love you, Yoma. We love you. We love you. We're happy you're here and not in the Ukraine, but I have a grandson, as I told you, in the Ukraine. As we speak, we're on his way there. Breslov. Uman. Not a Siach Yitzchak. Siach Yitzchak, if you know what I'm talking about. A whole group. I love him. He's, by the way, my tallest grandson, 6'6", and his father is shorter than I am. And my other son's Laura, 6'4", 6'3", and the kids are all tall. But go and explain it. He's 6'6", and his father is shorter than I am. Max Daniels. Okay, you wonder in late, at least bring in a bottle of the good stuff. Next time, it'll be after, all right, after the time, it's Fayam Kippur, Kenetanitin Alachayim. Jason Allen. Jason. Now, one second, Jason. You were not in class yesterday. No, you were not. You're not in that class. Okay, Jason Allen. Rafi Klein, my dear student. Okay, we made him, going to make him grace by the end of the year. Alex Glassman, dear student. Oh, wow. I am a fortunate man. Ora Watson, Mark Watson. Alan Strauss, did he find a job? What's happening? Moshe Schwartz, he had all the good intentions, but I see he's being washed out this year. Morty Tarrigan, Vic Snow, Yitz Rubin. Are you a student or a sightseer?
I'm a student, but I'm not signed up yet.
You're going to be in the class?
I have to speak to them.
Let, one second. Where are you from?
No.
Answer me. Where were you born? I hear that strange accent. Where in London? Where do you live? Where do you daven?
Diana
Erentrau. Diana Erentrau. Okay, my daughter knows him from the Diana business. And how do you come to YU?
I was in New York before
you. Yeshiva College. In all of Great England, they haven't produced an institution worthy of our admiration. How do you explain that? But they did give us a Sansino Shas that America could never do. Okay, when you're ready, if you become my student, I'll be happy to welcome you. They did great. They did great. Let's not put down the Sansino Shas. Back here. I wish I had the Rub's copy. Jason, they say the Rub's copy of Sansino, with people who saw it in his house, say was all mocked up with his corrections. It would be fascinating. If that exists, would that be fascinating? Wow. Gentlemen, as we mentioned last week and we mentioned last year, the Third World War broke out between the supporters of Rabbi Young and the supporters of Rabbi Soloveitchik. Even when you look at the names, the seven different people we spoke about, you can see right away Isaacs, Professor Isaacs is going to support Dr. Young, no question about it. Someone like Dean Zahr is going to support Rabbi Soloveitchik. He's a Litvisher. But it was really a standoff. Rabbi Belkin was a youngster. No one even thought about him. But it's a standoff. Students are very anxious. It's not an easy institution when you don't have someone who has full authority. The buck stops here. Decisions have to be made. And there's no place where the buck will stop. Remember, Harry Truman had that on his desk. Am I right? The buck stops here. That was his expression. And he had that on his desk. And, you know, the president is the president. There's no two ways about it. In Israel, it's the prime minister has that power. Tremendous power. It's tremendous power in one individual. I don't know if it's good or bad. It frightens me that one individual has this type of power. Only the Ribbono Shel Olam has to have that power. But all right, you need a baradat atzmach al tesmoch. If you know what's going on in Israeli politics, you know what I'm alluding to now. What went on with the cabinet, with the war, with Bennett, with Dichter. I mean, it's frightening. If Bennett and Dichter are correct, it's absolutely frightening to me, at least. But you can't run an institution without someone who is the ultimate authority. When the students saw that that there's a standoff between Young and Soloveitchik, and there were supporters of both. There were students who swore that Rabbi Soloveitchik was the greatest gift that Lithuania has given America. There were students who viewed him as a member of the Igudas HaRabbanim, and you know, the way people view Haredim. You'll hear people refer to Haredim, bloodsuckers, parasites, you know, all these words are thrown around. And they had the same attitude. The Rav is involved with the Rabbanu, the Achsherim, he's not reliable, he's not this, he's sold out. Rabbi Young, pro and con. Rabbi Young, decency, rabbi, knowledgeable, spokesman, English level, from London. Others said, Rabbi Young, an Amoritz, how does he compare to our Litvish Rosh Yeshiva? You understand? Different worlds. What? Rabbi Young, he won't know what a yeshiva is. How does he understand a shir from Rav Moshe Soloveitchik? How did he understand, etc., etc.? Students saw there was a standoff. What's very fascinating, the two individuals that the students turned to, see, it reveals what the student body of what you would call YU today, what we'll call Yeshiva College and Yeshiva of the early 40s, who the heroes were. Very revealing. You know who the students turned to? Actually, a letter was sent out to him. Rabbi Dr. Yitzchak Isaac Halevi Herzog. Get all the facts, page 69. But I know this, I don't have to quote Vic, I know it from my own research. Now, who was Rabbi Herzog? You have to understand. Rabbi Herzog, first of all, was a gon adir. They say his bekiyut, even in the right-wing world, and remember, by the 50s already, you have a right-wing in Israel that doesn't want to hang a flag on Yom HaTzmut and is arguing with the Pontifical Rav for hanging a Mugen David, the blue and white flag on Yom HaTzmut. Rabbi Herzog was revered by all Talmidei Chachamim. What's interesting about Rabbi Herzog? He is autodidactic. He never attended a yeshiva for one simple reason. He was raised in Paris. And in Paris, his father was Rav, where Rabbi Monk is later Rabbi, Rabbi Yoel Herzog. And there was no yeshiva in Paris. Even today, there's no yeshiva of stature in Paris or London. It's interesting. New York is vibrant with Torah. But Eastern Europe never achieved what New York achieved. There are reasons why. Not for now. Rabbi Herzog studied with his father. Corresponded with the Ritbaz of Tslutsk. Of when the Ritbaz came to Paris to sell copies of the Yerushalmi that he had published with his Perushim, Rabbi Herzog, as he was a teenager, was the happiest kid alive. And the Ritbaz was taken by a kid in Paris. Kol HaTorah Kula, he knew. Later he goes to London, he marries the Av Beitin, Rav Shmuel David Hillman's daughter, the Av Beitin of London's daughter, Sarah Herzog. She was an Ishiyot. Did you know I knew her yet? Wow. A great, great lady. Great lady. Majestic. Majestic. Royalty. Royalty. You know, headed up the Mizrahi Women, the Muna, whatever group, the charity she did, Ezra's Noshim, which became Herzog Hospital in her memory. That's all this lady's accomplishment. He then gets a PhD in marine biology in London. You're right, he writes on Tchelet, right or wrong. Rabbi Herzog knew, they say, 8-9 languages fluently. I mean, like the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Perhaps the Rav knew as many languages. His knowledge of math, of science, second to none. His English, the king's English. We were just talking about it, walking to shul yesterday. So Sam Dershowitz was telling me when he spoke at Yeshiva in 49, I placed the date, Sam said I'm right. I said I recorded, I have it in the Suva era. He spoke at the yeshiva, see this Rav with this long clothes, chief rabbi, long beard, Langer Begodim, chief rabbi. And they're used to hearing everyone speaking Yiddish at that time in YU. And Rabbi Herzog gets up with the King's English. He floored them. Ah, the students were dreaming. But interesting who they dreamt about. But you have to know Rabbi Herzog's background. He later becomes Rav in Ireland. He later becomes chief rabbi in Ireland. Rabbi Hutna, my revered neighbor, Zeichet Tzadik of Rabbi Yeshua Hutna, told me the story. And he told me Rav Meir Berlin visits Ireland. It's the mid-30s. And he's raising money for Mizrahi, raising awareness of Mizrahi. And here's Rav Herzog, a gon shebegoinim, and all right, with Ovik, don't be overly impressed. You are looking at the chief rabbi of Maplewood, South Orange, 1962 to 1969. You got it? Don't be overly impressed by titles. All of Ireland, there were a handful of frum Jews, big deal, chief rabbi. Come on. So Rav Meir Berlin described to Rav Hutner, who described to me what happened. He stayed in Rav Herzog's home for Shabbos. And Rav Herzog was reticent, was a Talmud Chacham at Gelikten Lernen. I don't know how to say that in English. And after Havdalah, the Rebbetzin says to him, No, Isaac, you will the Mepisak and you want to tell Rabbi Berlin something. She pushed him. And Rabbi Herzog says to Rabbi Meir Berlin, we want to go in Aliyah. We're big Mizrahiites. We want to go. Could you find a job for us? I'm even willing to be a shamus in a shul in Yerushalayim. 2 years later, he was elected chief rabbi. Okay? 2 years later. And Rabbi Meir Berlin, you know, they didn't know a guy willing to be a shamus. 2 years later, he was elected chief rabbi. He said to YU very nicely, they wanted to give him an honorary doctorate. You don't know what went on. I have this in silver. I'm sorry I'm talking about my books. I apologize. It's not nice, but I have no other source. There's no one else who's written about this, or who knows it even. So they wanted to give him an honorary doctorate. I saw the telegram. He says, I regret my first doctorate. I don't want to have to regret a second doctorate. You understand? The Kanoim carried on. Their Pasquailas, Dr. Herzog, Eisenin Rav Rashi said, the Kanoim carried on. And he said, keep your honorary doctorate. But he turned them down. He was a Tzioni, a Zionist. My wife is furious at a certain rabbi who lived in Israel, lives here many years, and wanted to become president of Yeshiva University. Not Rabbi Riskin. Rabbi Riskin's dream was to go back and forth to be a chief rabbi at YU, a world institution. But at least his wife tied him down here. He couldn't leave Efrat entirely. But there was someone else who was willing to go back. And my wife is a big Zionist. She's not like me. I'm a realist. She's a Zionist. So she was so angry. I said, Rabbi Herzog, you'll be proud. He was offered the presidency, and he turned it down. For one shot of Jack Daniels that will be supplied by Max, who was the second person they offered it to? Ellie? Knew anybody? Tell me. Who was the second most dominant figure in the Rub's spiritual, intellectual life? First, Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Second, Reb Chaim Hella. Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Fascinating. Reb Chaim Hella, he had running away from Hitler. He had just come to America. The Rub was involved in saving his life. The Rav's proto-Rebbe. It wasn't the real Rebbe, but when he was in Germany and his father was out of his life, he needed a father figure. He needed a figure of all of tradition that stood before him, the Pleitat Sofreihem. That's his chesed for Reb Chaim Hella. Jason, the Rav, you don't know what Kavod HaTorah was. There were 2,000 people at the Yahrzeit Shir. Rav Chaim Hella walked in a little late. The Rav stopped the shir, went down off the platform to greet his Rebbe, embrace his Rebbe, take his coat, hang it up, sit him down and then he asked permission to continue the shiur. Get it? This is what the relationship was. I saw it with my own eyes. This is Kavod HaTorah. Okay? So the boy, who is Reb Chaim, he knew everything. He knew everything. Gentlemen, there are people who know everything. He knew Kol HaTorah, Kol HaTorah, Rishonim, Achronim, Shasim, Paiskim. He knew ancient languages. He knew biblical criticism. He had a PhD. The man, he had the Beis Medrash Elyon in Berlin. That's where the Rav met him. That's where the Lubavitcher Rebbe met him. But it wasn't successful. I knew a few graduates from there. You know why it wasn't successful? They used to say, Avad, you have to be a Reb Chaim Hella to understand the Sheyurim in the Beis Medrash Elyon. How many people are on that level? This is why a Rebbe has to know. I have said this so many times. People in the Kollel, my Talmud, they get up to speak. They shoot around with 1,000 sources. All right, what'd you do? You showed off like a chassan at his wedding, but no one understood you. A great Rebbe has to know tzimtzum. The Rav would take one source and hit away and hit away. Boy, you didn't forget it. That the Rav knew Kol HaTorah Kula. You got to know that. If you knew the Rav for 40 years, you got to understand what he knew. But Rebbe, Reb Chaim Hella, the Rav, there's the description, and I translated into English, actually. I dedicated the start of the Rav, where the Rav describes how he came into Reb Chaim Hella's room in the west side, and he's learning the Malbushei Yontav. He's learning Achronim, and he's sitting there, and like you're in a different world. You're no longer on the west side. Remember, that's where the Rav describes modern orthodoxy with clipped wings, okay? And he says, with Reb Chaim Hella, he brought me back to a world that could soar, that could fly. There were no clipped wings. Now, the students turned to Reb Chaim Hella. I frankly have to tell you this in brackets. I don't think Reb Chaim Hella could have made a good president. I mean, administration, and you know, he was in a different world. But it could be as a figurehead, if he would have had proper vice presidents under him, like Rabbi Lamb was privileged to have Sheldon Sokol. Sheldon Sokol, you got to have respect for that guy. He kept the yeshiva afloat. Everyone loved to criticize him, that he's cheap, he's tight, he's this, he's that. In the meantime, there were no tremendous financial crises from the moment that Sheldon Sokol took charge. And I salute him. It's not because he was my classmate. I salute him because he deserves to be admired. You understand? Don't minimize what Sheldon Sokol did for Rabbi Lamb. So it could be that if Reb Chaim Hella had proper people, but to see Reb Chaim Hella's answer was interesting. This already involves politics, pro, con. You know, he couldn't be stupid. Reb Chaim Hella knew what was going on. People in favor of the Rav, people criticizing the Rav, people in favor of Rabbi Young, people criticizing Rabbi Young. Reb Chaim Hella said he'd be happy to be president if his election would be unanimous. Well, the minute you make it a condition that you want the election to be unanimous, it doesn't work. We're human beings, we're Jews. Am Kishei Orev. When's the last time that we were unanimous? One of my lines that was edited out, because they didn't want the Washington book to be over to be more than 500 pages, it wind up being 530, but there are about 36 pages or something like that of pictures in the book. So part of a chapter was edited out, but it hurts me because there was a very insightful line there. After I described what Russia was like in my first visit, Malka and I visited first time January 81, no machloket. A handful of balei tshuva, none Chabad. Chabad always had some, but these were people who couldn't be attracted to Chabad. These were people who, they considered themselves more intellectual than Chabad. By the way, they may be wrong in what their self-view, But this is the way they looked upon it, not Chabad. One of them wouldn't sing when he came to Israel, whenever he heard that very prominent person, Eliasas. Whenever he heard them singing Mashiach, Mashiach, he wouldn't sing. He would stomp out in anger that that's Chabad the Messiah. And what does it have to do? It's a song on Mashiach. Someone sang it. So there were a handful of Balei Tshuva, right? That's why the Mossad contacted me. They said that they got a request for someone to teach Gemara, and Aryeh Kroll says, Aravna Kazir, Aravna Kefet, Anachli Yodim Shatra Yodei Eichol Ameid Gemara, and Anachnu Skukim Lemishu Hukam Olcha, Mamaskava. Then I described, when I come back 4 years later, 85, after being involved in sending so many people to teach, I say I knew that there was a proper Jewish community, Torah community, because there was so much machlekes. You follow? 4 years later, there was one individual said, if you teach in that group, you can't teach in mine. Yitz, am I telling it as it was? Rabbi Rubin says he is afraid so. Eidut nemana. Don't have to believe the Rebbe. Shnei Eidim.
I would not applaud some of these individuals.
You would not what?
Applaud. Hold them up in high regard.
Yitzhak, relax yourself. Yitzhak says, I have to repeat what you say. People ask me in America, why don't you repeat? We hear what you say, but we don't hear what Rabbi Rubin is challenging you on. Rabbi Rubin says he wouldn't hold some of these people in such high regard. But Yitzhak, you have to. This is functioning under the communists. You understand? And the same thing here. There's so much machloiket, but nevertheless, I would imagine that Reb Chaim Kanievsky is a fabulous Jew. You understand what I'm saying? He's involved, and the statements he's made, all right, they get caught up. Look at Rav Ovadia. I knew Rav Ovadia, the greatest Jew I knew, and Azad Ziskait, and such a warm human being. All right, he got caught up. What can I tell you? You understand? The Lubavitcher everyone's too. Remember the election? What was it? The late 80s, early 90s, late 80s, I think, 80s, whatever, where he supported Agudat Yisrael. The Rebbe never made a mistake in politics, but once you got involved in Israeli politics, boy, was that a mistake. You follow? So, I understand. But we're Jews. Reb Chaim Hiller wants unanimous. It can never be unanimous. Now, watch carefully. While all this is going on, Rabbi Young versus Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Herzog says no. Rabbi Hella puts on conditions that are impossible. Rabbi Shmuel Belkin is establishing himself as a fabulous Rosh Yeshiva. The students love him. He sets policy. What Gemara are you going to teach? He turns to Rav Soloveitchik. Whatever Rav Soloveitchik says, that's the Gemara. The whole yeshiva has to follow. See, there's a beautiful relationship, symbiotic relationship, that already started developing between the Rav and Rav Shmuel Belkin back in Providence, Rhode Island, and Boston, Massachusetts. And now, the other Rosh Yeshiva have no say. That continued. I don't know what it is today in the yeshiva, but Kol's Mandat, Rabbi Soloveitchik, was active. He decided which Masechet. I still remember the year that the Rav decided to teach Sanhedrin. It's not a yeshiva Masechet. The yeshivas in Europe learned Noshim Nezikin. Who learned Sanhedrin? I don't want to mention the name. So there was one Rosh Yeshiva, Mr. Abrams tells me, we were friendly, I was a good kid, Mr. Abrams was very nice to me. He says, Arnold, do you know that the rabbi, and gives me the name, he's very upset with what Rabbi Soloveitchik chose. I look at him, I say, why is he upset? Because he never heard Shayurim in Sanhedrin. He has to start from scratch, and it's too hard for him at his age. All right. I don't know. All my life, I'm like a kid. I'm taking on new material. You can't believe what I'm dealing with. You don't know what I fell into, thanks to my dear students here with a Reuven, into Rabbi Asher Klein, into Mishnah Halachat. Wow, what a world. New material. All right. it should help keep my mind fresh. They say if you take on new material, it keeps the mind working. I don't know. As Malchus says to me, Ein Lanu, there's no greater example of this than the Rav. And take a look what happened to his mind. So I don't know. There are no tricks. Mendaf Betten, Mendaf Vice Betten. That's why we have a Rosh Hashanah. The Eibishter should be kind to us. But gentlemen, Rabbi Belkin, he turns to the Rav once he makes the decision. No one can say boo. The Rosh Yeshiva are silent. The students love Rabbi Belkin. And now, let's come back to the seven big shots who are going to do the crucial vote. 42 passes on. 43 passes. The middle of 43. It's already 2 years. 2.5 years, we have to reach a decision. This cannot go on indefinitely. Now, as I said, these seven people all have to have egos. Remember, I told you more than once, and we'll come to it today, next week, next time, lecture again, next week, Bezrat Hashem. Without an ego, you don't get ahead in life. You go, Kefid's happy, sit in his little office, learn, entertain classes. Happy guy. Titles. Had I not had that bad experience in the Rabbin in 61, 62, I wouldn't be sitting here. I would have become a president, a chancellor, a Rosh Yeshiva. Well, you should have heard the office. A Chaver Knesset. Okay. But I'm a bad example. No ego. These seven people have to have egos. You don't become a borough president without an ego. You don't become the rabbi of KJ without an ego. You don't become a Pinchas Chorgan without an ego. And a few of the people on this committee started to look at Belkin. Look, we can't elect Young. We can't elect Soloveitchik. But you know, this Dr. Belkin, he has it. He's a Rav, a Talmud Chacham, a PhD, Greek, Latin. The students love him. We're going to elect him. And we are going to control him. We're the bosses. We'll really be running yeshiva. We'll be dictating policy. Rabbi Belkin, it's like in politics. What do they call it? A straw man. We'll put him up. He can be the president. He can be the Rosh Yeshiva. He can solve the Young Soloveitchik dilemma. But we'll be the real bosses. And in 1943, by majority vote, Rabbi Belkin is elected the second President Rosh Yeshiva. Very interesting how the votes break down. Rabbi Vic Geller, I should say, page 71, gives us a very interesting description. Rabbi Luchstein, more than anyone, figured, well, this Dr. Belkin, I'm going to be his mentor. Well, if Rabbi Luchstein thinks that way, Sam Levy, Rabbi Luchstein's president, Rabbi Luchstein's congregant, Rabbi Luchstein's devotee thinks that way. Dr. Chorgan, who later becomes the president of Bar Ilan, Dr. Belkin is great. I'm his mentor. I'm older. I'm more worldly. I've been here longer. I'm going to be the boss. Shmuel Leib Zahar. The only one on the board who supported the Rav, because he was a Litvisher. But he too, when he sees that you can't elect the Rav, he's the one who leads the battle. Make the vote unanimous. Watch. Dean Isaacs, Dr. Young, Torim Derech Eretz, Leo Young, Shmuel Belkin, added up, Rabbi Belkin, 4 votes. Dr. Young, 2 votes. The Rav, 1 little vote. They then... I told you, Zalitvisha. He loved the Rav. He loved the learning. And you couldn't... May 25th, 1943... Dr. Belkin is elected unanimously on the second vote, the president and Rosh Yeshiva of Reitz and Yeshiva College. It is fabulous. Vic Geller, very insightful. I quote from him. Lukstein thought that he had won. 3 years later, he still sought to educate his protege on proper academic procedures. He sent him a detailed 13-point, 3-page letter outlining appropriate commencement exercises. I saw the letter. It's literally like the boss is writing to an employee, do this, do that, don't do this, don't do that. It's unbelievable. But for Shmuel Belkin... And that's what they said. The joke in the yeshiva was, Chazal, Churgin Tzar Lukstein, made Dr. Belkin second president and Rosh Yeshiva. Tzar, once he saw that the Rav couldn't win, threw all his support behind the second Litvish candidate, Reb Shmuel Belkin. So there's a lot of truth to that. Chazal made Dr. Belkin the second president. But boy, did they miscalculate. Let me quote to you from Vic Geller, and he knew Dr. Belkin, and boy, no one said it better, I'll tell you in a second. Belkin's prodigious intellect and fierce determination were cloaked in a quiet, self-effacing demeanor. Flamboyance was contrary to his nature. Oratory was not his strength. He didn't need them. People were totally taken with his gentle, almost innocent manner. Both before and during the election campaign, Belkin's muted style was misread by Lukstein, the kingmaker, and others as guileless and pliant. They would later learn that their estimate of the young scholar was very wrong. The popular adage, what you see is what you get, did not apply to this young man from Switzerland, Poland. And it's just amazing. And you take Chazal, ultimately, the yeshiva became very big and very powerful, but they didn't feel that they were running it anymore. Dr. Churgin leaves for Bar Ilan. It's like a welcome parachute where he could become the focal figure, first founding president of Bar Ilan. Dean Tzar, who was very clever, had a literature insight, once said to me, and I quote, these ears heard it. He said to me, you know, that under Rabbi Revel, I was very important in the yeshiva. I was second in command. He says, under Rabbi Belkin, they give me fancy titles. He was called Dean of Students. But the more titles I have, the less influence I have. You understand? He knew he no longer was second in command. I love the way he said it. He was in charge of the 4 D's. So that's when the students had to go to Rav Shmuel Leib Tzar. He was in charge of the divinity exemptions. That was about the most powerful card he had afterwards. But I love what he said to me. The more titles I have, the less power and influence I have. Rabbi Lukstein, here there's a fascinating story which I know from within, which shows you some of the conflict that you're caught up with when you're involved in yeshiva and fundraising. So I'll tell you the story, and I can't say who's right, who's wrong. It's just the reality of life. But Rabbi Lukstein used to introduce the honorary doctorates, and his mouth pearls of wisdom came out of it. These people getting the honorary doctorate didn't recognize themselves when Rabbi Lichtenstein got done with them. You know, he's introducing some big businessman who made millions, who knows how many of the millions were made totally legally, with then totally honestly. And he introduced this great ethical businessman, a sterling example of modern ethics and all that the Choshen Mishpat stands right on. And this Mr. Big is listening to Dr. Lichtenstein. He's going crazy with joy. So, and then later, at a certain point, Rabbi Lichtenstein no longer introduces the honorary doctorates. So I was really upset. I said, well, what happened here? So I got hold of one of the big shots on the yeshiva's board of trustees. And I said to him, tell me the truth. Why did Rabbi Belkin get rid of Rabbi Lichtenstein? And he told me the truth, very simply. Churgin. What bailed out Rabbi Churgin? What gave him power? What gave Dr. Churgin influence? Bar Ilan University. No, when yeshiva develops, who becomes the second president, the chancellor, I think they called him, of Bar Ilan, who becomes the leading figure in Bar Ilan? One of the schools is named in his memory today, Rabbi Lichtenstein, right or wrong, also gets a parachute to get influence, power, title, prestige, Bar Ilan University. Right or wrong, the 60s now into the 70s, wow. So I was told the following story by this board of trustee member. He said, Aaron, what are you, naive? Let me tell you what would happen. You have this guy who gave yeshiva, let's say, $1 million. Although at that time no one gave $1 million yet. The first million was Joe Griss in 68. But the guy gave heavy money to yeshiva, what would be a few $1 million today. So Rabbi Lichtenstein introduces him. Later that year, Rabbi Lichtenstein contacts him for Bar Ilan. Now, the average balabas, who introduced you at a YU affair? Rabbi Lichtenstein. So he gives Bar Ilan a few $1 million. Rabbi Belkin contacts him a few months later for YU. The balabas says to Rabbi Belkin, I just contributed, I gave Rabbi Lichtenstein, you follow me? So I can understand already why Rabbi Belkin felt ill at ease. He didn't want to have YU and Bar Ilan mixed up on the same podium. So ultimately, Chazal, each one was minimized on the YU scene, and Rabbi Belkin rules the nicest, quietest, sweetest individual, but an absolute iron will. The man could move mountains. It's beyond comprehension how he was able to accomplish what he did. Yes, we'll come to this in more detail. He was very fortunate. He had a beautiful, ongoing working relationship with the Rav, so that if we could use modern terminology, there was always a hechsha in the yeshiva to what Rabbi Belkin was doing. Whatever issue came up until the early 70s, and we'll come into that in detail, but not yet, whatever issue came up in the yeshiva, Rabbi Belkin could rule because he had the best spiritual advisor. He was the king, but his spiritual advisor, the Rav, who was revered, stood behind him 100%. I'll give you a few examples in a second. Ellie.
Don't some people argue that the Rav was actually very upset because he wanted the presidency and...
Okay, so you're asking a different question, which is worthy. I will come to it when we discuss the relationship in more detail, but I just want to put it into context now. But you're asking a very important question. Did the Rav really want the presidency of YU? And that the debate hangs fire until today. I am convinced from my research and talking with members of the family who knew the Rav intimately as his own blood and flesh, that the Rav absolutely wanted the presidency of YU. I'm convinced. If you read Shulamit Meiselman's memoir, she comes down on my side 100%. And Gerba, the Rav's younger sister, who was not as involved as Shulamit Meiselman, who was older, and Gerba claims she's not certain her brother, and Vigela quotes her, he interviewed her, she's not certain that the Rav wanted the presidency, but he would have, at least he should have been asked. It should have been offered to him. I don't agree. I think he wanted it, b'lev and nefesh, that this was the ultimate prize, this was the ultimate goal. You got to remember, it's not Yeshiva University of today, where the presidency is identified solely with fundraising and with Akmas Nefesh, and you know what Rabbi Lamb had ultimately, and Richard Joel certainly has struggled. At that time, the presidency of Yeshiva, Rosh Yeshiva, President America, what we have achieved, second to none. Wow, a Litvisha greenhorn who came to America. I believe the Rav wanted the presidency, b'lev v'nefesh. I think we have to thank God, we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he didn't get the presidency. Had he achieved the presidency, and we'll see this, I'll give you sources, he wouldn't be the Rav, plain and simple. And we're going to see it next week, next time we meet, you're going to see. But at that time, they thought in terms of Rabbi Revel. Rabbi Revel was president, was Rosh Yeshiva, said a shir, Chagahalton Balernin, went into the classroom, spoke and learning, used to pat students on the back, V'yazayu Yirat Shemayim, how is your Yirat Shemayim, are you wearing tzitzit? Rabbi Revel was famous, right, for the pats on the back, checking if the students were wearing tzitzit, all right? Today, I don't believe the Rebbeim have to pat anyone on the back, it's a different era. But that was the 30s. So that was the vision. That was the vision the Rav had, and I'll give you. I'll say. I'm watching the clock, but let me say a vart from the Rav that I said a year ago or 2 years ago. It's an unbelievable vart that I heard, and the Rav was talking about the efficacy of prayer. So you know, when you pray, sometimes your prayers are answered, sometimes they're not. So the Rav said something unbelievable. He said the truth of the matter is your prayers are always answered, but even when they're not, that may be the greatest answer for you, that God didn't answer your prayers. And the Rav said, I can give you an example from my Leben, and the Rav says, there was a point in my life where I prayed so hard for a certain rabbinate. My prayers, I pleaded with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and my prayers were not granted. And then the Rav paused. Thank God they weren't granted. Well, I wouldn't be alive, my wife wouldn't be alive, my children wouldn't be alive. Now, that's what the Rav said, quote, word by word. Rakepit's theory. And I believe when you say a theory, you can be 80%. I believe I'm on to 99% right here on the theory, but there's no one in the world who can basically and tell me if I'm totally 100% right. But from my history and my knowledge of the period and the Rav and his life, I can tell you exactly when this was. The Rav had an uncle, Rav Menachem Karakovsky, the Avodat HaMelech. You're all familiar, I trust, with the Avodat HaMelech. Rav Menachem Karakovsky was married to Pesha's sister, Badana. She actually was originally engaged to Rav Chaim Moiser, if I'm not mistaken, and the Shidduch broke off. Rebellia Pruzhana's daughter, Rebellia Feinstein's daughter. First cousin to Reb Moshe Feinstein. So, Baruch HaTorah. He was the Vilna Rabbinate, never had an Av Beit Din, never had a chief rabbi, I should say, from the time of the Vilna Gaon, because there was a Reb Shmuel who was the chief rabbi, and when he died, there was tremendous machloket, as Jews are capable of, and they made a cherem in Vilna. There would never be a chief rabbi again. So Vilna functioned with the Beit Din. So the Av Beit Din, of course, was Reb Chaim Moshe Brzezinski in the 1910s, the 1920s, 1930s. Rav Meir Basin was a member of the Beis Din, that's Rav Gustman's father-in-law. And Rav Menachem Karakovsky was a member of the Beis Din. And his job was a member of the Beis Din and Shtot Magid. He was the Magid Meisharim of Vilna. Whenever there was a public function, a wedding, a funeral, a tshuva drasha, a Shabbos HaGadol drasha, the Magid Meisharim would give the drasha. That was Rav Menachem Karakovsky. He died in 29, a young man. At that point, a year later, the Rav starts going with Tanya Levitt from Vilna, and the Rav is married, the Rav is finishing his doctorate, and the Rav needs a position. I believe that the Rav's greatest dream was to succeed his uncle as Shtot Magid and a member of the Beis Din of Vilna. And it was not achieved. Why wasn't it achieved? There, I don't have to say a theory. It's very simple. Of course, the Rav already had a doctorate from Berlin. He had broadened. And there were Rabbanim in Vilna, including perhaps Rav Chaim Ayza, that this was not their cup of tea. They were very suspect. A Rav with a doctorate from Berlin, they were very suspect. And the Rav, now I come back to the Rav's words, how hard I prayed for that position. That's all I dreamt about, all I wanted. Thank God my prayers were not answered. By not answering me, the Ribbono Shel Olam answered me by saving my life, my wife's life, and my children's life. So that's the way I view, it's very powerful what I just said. And I'm very curious if anyone here in touch with Reb Heshish Shechter, with Rav Shechter, ask him. He knows that the Rav, what I just told you, the first part from the Rav, he knows, I believe. But I want to know if he heard my theory and what he has to say. But gentlemen, the Rav desperately wanted, in my opinion, to be president. This was the dream, this was the goal, this was the crown, this was the jewel in the crown. To succeed Rabbi Revel, the leading Torah figure in the Torah scene in the United States and the Western world, Yeshiva University. Thank God the Rav didn't achieve it. That's all I can say. Let me end off with one example of how they complemented each other. And this is a classic example. It's probably the best example anyone could give. When the draft was mandatory, suddenly you have 4Ds. Now, every Tom, Dick, and Harry is taking a 4D, but the American government needs rabbis. And there's a real ethical problem here. The Reform, and to a lesser degree the Conservative, everyone is willing to be a rabbi. But is that right that we should leave hundreds of thousands of Jewish boys serving in the American army without any Orthodox chaplain? Well, everything was on a volunteer basis. Tayre Vadas, Chaim Berlin, Lakewood weren't exactly interested, although there were some who became chaplains, but Miat She'ena Nikar. And the one place that could really supply chaplains was YU. So Rabbi Belkin was caught in a tremendous dilemma. And he wanted to introduce a draft at YU, a lottery, with the rabbis. Rabbi Rubin can give you much more details than I can because he was a chaplain, but I believe I have the story correct. Well, the students started to yell and shout. It comes up in response literature when I get to Reb Menashe Klein. You'll see when I deal with it. What do you mean, rabbis? We'll be Mechallel Shabbos. We will be in places where we can't get kosher food. How can you ask us to become rabbis? How can you ask us to volunteer? How can you ask us to be involved in a situation where we'll have shuls without mechitzat? We'll have minyanim that they drive to on Friday night. They're brought from various army bases. And all the problems that a chaplain who is committed to Torah faces. Well, Rabbi Belkin had a real dilemma. He asked the Rav to write a tshuva. Why graduates of Reitz should be chaplains and deal with the halachic problems. I think it's one of the finest Shavuot that we have that was ever written by the Rav. It appears in his collected, in Torah Tarav, is probably the most important volume with the Rav's letters and epistles and proclamations. Right? You know what I'm talking about? The volume, it's translated into Hebrew. The Hebrew volume has letters that the Rav wrote in Hebrew. The original, the ancient one, has translations from, Hebrew to English. The Hebrew volume has translations from English to Hebrew. It was later published. It was published in tradition. The Rav made it available. It's all based upon the Gemara and Shabbos, Daf Yotet, the whole sugya of Gimel Yom called them Hashabbat, Sarim. You go to war 3 days before. You can travel on a boat 3 days before. The Dvar Mitzvah, a boat where you'll have to be Mechal Shabbos. I can't go into it now. It's the whole sugya and Shabbos. How do you understand the Gemara, the Machlokes Rishonim, the Baal Mar there? It's a fabulous sugya. And you see, the Rav, I'll use the word, was the Heksha that Rabbi Belkin needed. Rabbi Belkin couldn't pull this off alone. Students would have been hypercritical. But when the Rav wrote a tshuva and banged on the table and said, "Ich bin maskim mit Dr. Belkin, I agree with Dr. Belkin," no one could open their mouths. Issue solved. Follow me, Rafi? What was a big issue was now dwarfed into Kleinkeit, smallness, finished, beautiful. Zug, what the Gemara talks about, the Zugot. Rabbi Revel had the Meitshita. Rabbi Revel had Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. By the way, not at all times was their relationship amicable. On one level, it was magnificent. On the other level, Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik had no use for Chochmat Yisrael. Rabbi Revel suffered at times. I write about it. Revel, of course. Rabbi Palev, I remember interviewing him. And then I showed him the document. He couldn't believe I had. He didn't know what archives were. You can find the document from 40, 50 years ago. And there it is, black and white. But the Rav and Rabbi Belkin, it was a perfect zug. One was the Nasi, one was the Avbeitin. Yossi ben Yossi has been trained. Mamash like Kilu v'Shamai. It was a perfect zug, a perfect zug, until the early 70s. And we'll talk about it. Ugh, gentlemen, we're only scratching the surface. First of all, what did we do today? All right, we did today. I was totally honest. I tried, because I don't want to get involved in Lashon Hara Rechil, that, you know, and give out grades. This, because people, when you would interview people on this era, you would hear a lot of positivisms and a lot of negativisms. And I don't know. We're Torah people. People are human beings. Like I told Yitzchak, not everyone can be a total tzaddik, not everyone can have no self-interest. Chazal already said it. All right. I try. I grew up in Musa. I try to be a very decent human being. When I drive my car, if someone wants to come in, I wave them in. I stop. I wave people to cross. It's chesed. To me, it's chesed. But all right, what can I tell you? Not everyone.
Applied Judaism.
Well, I know that in Maplewood, South Orange, one time a guy overtook me and screamed at me, "You damn clergy, you're too dash." I don't use the word he used, obviously. "You're too dash nice to people." He was furious. I let someone come in ahead of me, pulling out. So you lose a half second. Big deal. God. But you did a chesed. You did a chesed. Okay. But I try to be totally honest, and that was the election process. That's the way it divided up. It was made unanimous that the fact that they turned to Rabbis Herzog and Heller, that, you follow me, that is very revealing, because that shows you, Alex, where the students were at. I don't know today in YU if they'd look for people with PhDs. I don't know. I can tell you that when the big battle was fought over the rabbinate in Shari Tfila this past year, so they had two candidates. It boiled down to a Lakewood guy and a YU guy. And if you know the Kehila, it's very mixed. There's a YU element, but a strong Lakewood element there too. The world has gone right. And they voted the YU guy. Okay, and he turned them down. It's a disgrace if you're a candidate and they go through all this fraud, then you turn them down. All right, they voted the YU guy. So I asked them, why did you vote the YU guy over the Lakewood guy? And they told me the YU guy could learn better. In other words, they were not interested in YU because of the bachelor's, the master's, at least he has a doctorate, I don't think he has a doctorate. But they were interested who can learn better. That was their one evaluation. When I spoke, I was introduced, this is the one rabbi that could solve all our problems. Why? Because I learned the Lakewood, I learned the YU, and I'm proud of what I got out of both of them. Okay? So, but people, you have to view it in a positive fashion. But Chazal, it's amazing the way they, over the years, their influence waned. It's amazing. And Dr. Belkin, strong as a lion. And he was the sweetest, nicest guy alive, but strong like a lion. And the Rav was fabulous for him. Their relationship was Nasi Beyond Beitin. They each knew their place. It's amazing. All right, we're going to pick up the document I show you next time. Changes my whole life. May change some of your lives as well. Gentlemen, the schedule is as follows. Listen to me very carefully. Next week, Sunday, no class. Not because Rakefet is solemn, but because it's Tzom Gedalia. Monday, class. No class from that point on. Yom Kippur, Sukkot. Wow. A lot to do. Now, the Sunday after Sukkot, October 19th, there is no class here. I don't know if there's school. I think the Kollel does start. How everyone will get back, because we're observing Wednesday, Thursday, then Friday, Shabbos. So Sunday you're traveling? I don't know. Anyway, there may be class here, but my class is not here. My class is at the OU at 8 p.m., the OU Center in the center of town. The title of my talk, The Chain Has Been Compromised, Torah Life Before the Holocaust and Afterwards. Launching of the fourth editions of Revel and Silva. So everyone is invited with your wives, your children, your parents.
What time?
8 o'clock, 8 p.m. It'll be announced in Torah Tidbits, I'm told. A number of freebies of interest. This is a graduate of MTA. His name was Avraham Fuss. Zichrono Livracha, he was a year or two older than I am. He established the Merkaz Haredi Institute of Technology. It's very fascinating to see what they're doing. They help Haredim. They say that we don't want to change their lifestyle, but we want to help them panasa-wise. Anyone interested, this shows you why we say, why the Mik Amcha Yisrael, Amachad Ba'aretz. This is the publication of retirees of the one division of the army, of Shiryon. What's that? The tank division, the armor division. And look at the chesed they do, retirees. It's just overwhelming. And as one who saw this last war up close, unfortunately, I know the greatness of what it means to volunteers. Kol hakavod. Gentlemen who are going into the rabbinate, these are problems you're going to have to deal with. Rakefet gave a year worth of lectures on it. Maybe you can listen to those lectures, Jason, and it will help you. Orthodox shul takes first step to hiring female clergy. That is Rabbi Alyssa Newborn. She is being hired to be a rabbi by a graduate of this classroom, a student who I had a very wonderful relationship, Rabbi Yosef Kenevsky, on the coast, the Beth David Synagogue, I think it's called. All right? How are you to deal with it? What can she do? What can't she do? Here's an article on an ultra-Orthodox woman raised in a Haredi frame set, how she's the happiest person alive when she goes to an egalitarian minyan and makes birchat haTorah when she's called to the Torah and makes a shechiyanu. How do you deal with it? Here's an article. I don't even know what the word means. I don't want to know. This is not a gay Mesorati rabbi. It's a happy Mesorati rabbi. God have mercy, what type of sexual life this deviant lives. And he today is a rabbi, highly admired, written up, given publicity, etc., etc. Yours for the taking. This is an unbelievable story of someone who's my Talmud here from the Kollel, Ron Eisenman from Passaic, goes with a long beard today. He makes Alex look like a shortstop with his beard, and he makes Yomo look even shorter, and he goes with that Bekesha, but he's my dear Talmud. The story here is unbelievable. How a sitter, he's from an Israeli family, I know the family here, Eitan Eisenman, I know the family. He, a sitter, his grandmother gave him 1960, that's how many years ago? 54, 55 years ago. He lost it on the subway, and 40-plus years later, someone returns it to him, not even knowing that it's his sitter. There's a photograph. What a story. This is the Sfarim blog with more material on Rabbi Cook, on a Mordechai Kaplan. What can I tell you? Mark Shapiro keeps it coming. And anyone who knows from the east side, the Shtetner Rebbe. Remember the Shtetner Rebbe? This is for you, Vic. What came out of his family. Very fascinating. My dear students, by the way, if anyone wants a pullout from Torah Tidbits with everything you need for Rosh Hashanah, yours for the asking. It's worthwhile if you don't have it. They do a beautiful job, Torah Tidbits. In Tui Mita, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming and filling up the room. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I thank you for those who let me teach yesterday. And Baruch Hashem, we were rolling. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. As those of you who listen to my message on the YU website, and I, Yomo, show me how to get them. My wife wants to hear it. I was stupid enough to show her the paper was sent to me announcing it. I don't know how to get it. I said, what? Well, you got to hear me. You hear me all the time. No, she wants to hear the message because she heard that I'm raising funds for YU. So she's, what do you get out of it? That's her question. Gentlemen, let me tell you, I get nothing out of it. Baruch Hashem, my hands are clean. It's worse than you think, because the last time I went to YU, I laid out money for the tickets, right, May, and you don't know how many months it took me. The check I wrote was in December. I finally got the money back in late August, and you don't know what I went through and how much I had to throw out 2 pounds of correspondence. All right, I gave them 9 lectures. That's on the house. They got $1 million in my honor. That's on the house. The ticket, you don't know what went on. You don't know what went on, Dad, because I live in Israel. I work in Israel. It's a different YU. Had to replenish a while. I can't believe it. And Rabbi Miller laughed at me. He said, you never lay out money. They have to buy the tickets for you. I'm an ignoramus. So I want to thank you very much, and it should be a meaningful tefillah tamusaf. Hear what I had to say about the Malkiyot and Zichronot and the Shofrot, and what I had to say about a certain Pasuk. I hope they didn't edit it out because it's a plifaliyah. And a ktiva v'chatima tova l'shnat chayim osha besora tova v'kol tov seller until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya. Thank you.
You should have a gesunta, you and my friend. The Eibishter should listen to your family, should have health.
Do you agree with me about the rub that he wanted it?
Yes, I think also it would have been a disaster for him.
Right, right.
And for the institution.
Right, that's right. Absolutely.
Absolutely. By the way, so I didn't catch it exactly. How did it back up? In other words, for the rub, that was the czar.
Right.
And who else?
Nobody.
And for Belkin, it was Belkin.
No, Belkin had four votes.
He had four.
Luxton, Gorgon, Belkin.
And Czar.
Isaacson and Young voted for Young. Got it?
Yeah.
Very simple. Ah, very simple.
Oh, yeah, where did you find it?
No, Robert Cafe.
Oh, because I went downstairs to the office.
They didn't have any.
No more.
David said you can help. I have to say. Don't ask what I'm. And my wife said, what are you working on?
Yeah, so I told her. She couldn't believe what I've done.
You see, he's the most open-minded person and the most narrow-minded person. A pleasure to deal with him because there is open-mindedness. His narrow-mindedness makes you realize how different we are than the world in which he comes from. And he still lives in to a certain degree. He's not alive anymore. But, you know, you can meet him on YouTube. I go in Reb Menashe Klein. There's a picture. There's a video where he's meeting with Balei Tshuva in Israel. It is precious. Precious. You'll see the derech eretz they have for him and the love he has for the Balei Tshuva. You'll see his Hebrew. And when he has no word, he says it in perfect English, and his untafir is translated into modern Hebrew. It's precious, precious, precious.
Is there that just the book launch is Sunday night? Yeah. Is there class Monday morning?
Yeah, Monday morning there's regular class.
Okay.
Yeah. Monday morning back to normal. I should have said that. Yeah, no, Baruch Hashem. I'll get a few hours sleep. I'll be fine. No problem.
I also appreciate hearing the story about the friends from my
Rebbe. Ah, you know who I'm. That's the way where the Rav tells him to get a doctorate.
Did he get a
doctorate? No. Enjoy Rechovat. He's not going to enjoy. He can't. He's not going to be Yotze Shofar. No, you don't know. He's not going to be Yotze Shofar. Tell him the story. I don't know how bad it is, but it could be, you know, this guy is so bad they don't want to embarrass him on the other hand.
I already have three places I have to go afterwards to blow for people. Okay. So that's even better.
Okay.
So
what did he say? Yeah, you'll be. No, he was worried. It's a problem. It's a problem. I know the problem. When someone has a chazaka.
That's what I decided. You know what I decided? The Rebbe mentioned something like that. Okay. Part of the thing. Quit while you're ahead.
That's also important to know how to quit while you're ahead.
Rebbe, what I was asking was the Rebbe have resentment towards Rebbe Belkin because he got the presidency? That's I heard the relationship with Sally a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
I wasn't talking about it in terms of whether you wanted it, but assuming you wanted it,
The relationship. I'll show you how it was solid. We'll get there.
We'll get there. Okay, very good.
If I don't, you can ask me next week. But let me first deal with what I have to deal. But we'll get there.
Are you ready to say over the story with the car, getting into the car? That's
yeah, that story is a good story. I don't need that back. Yeah. But you know something, maybe we should hold on to it. Here are the keys. Maybe we should hold on to it for... Okay, I'll hold on to it until he comes again. Sure.